dear podcast friends, welcome to Insights and Beyond, Digitalization, Sustainability and Technology, the podcast by Trelleborg Sealing Solutions. You're in the right place if you're interested in the driving questions around topics like digitalization, electrification and sustainability. And above all, if you want to participate in a discussion with your exciting questions and comments. Experience the talks with our experts from Trelleborg and specialists from business, industry and research. So have fun with a new episode of Insights and Beyond. What do we get when you ask 10,000 people about e-mobility worldwide? A lot of tough numbers, about 30,000 euro, 31 minutes and about 469 kilometers. This is the result of a large-scale current study on what consumers worldwide expect from electric cars. So much for the tough numbers when it comes to our everyday mobility. But what about resources? Can we really all put our money on the e-mobility sector? I'm looking forward to an exciting discussion on key issues of e-mobility with Dr. Martin Busche, Director of Engineering at Ferroses Energy Europe, and Professor Dr. Konrad Sauer, Vice President Innovation and Technology at Trelleborg Sealing Solutions. Hi, guys.
Hey. Hello.
First question, and you know, this is always a tough task in our podcast. If someone were to give a book title about your impact on e-mobility, what would be the title of it?
What's the right technology? I would put a question.
You would put a question.
I would put a question.
I would love to read the answer. So hopefully you will write that book anytime.
Exactly. Therefore, it needs a book.
Okay. So what about you?
So probably I add a question. It's more the how. How to get the electrification on the production lines. How to get this work, and probably this is more the scientific approach.
Yeah, maybe you should collaborate for it and you do a book series of it.
Whenever you want.
Very cool. Everyone is talking about e-mobility and there are a lot of current issues and to be honest, there are a lot of upcoming and future issues we have to solve and we have to discuss. But my question is, what question would you like to be asked? Because the question is, in your opinion, something which is very important, but at the same time, very unnoticed yet.
The question is e-mobility the only solution?
I think that's something which a lot of people have in mind. And I would be very, very happy if we could answer that question today, but I'm not sure if we're going to work it out. But what about you, Martin?
So principally, I would say it's the question everybody of us keeps in mind. So when we think back on our youth, when we drove all individually on our small 50cc two-stroke engined motorcycles, that was individual transportation at its best, I would say. It was freedom. And I think everybody of us will or wants to keep this kind of individual transportation. And I think we should think of how to do that, how to make that happen.
Mm. And that is more a current question than ever before because the corona crisis changed a lot. Now e-mobility is something which is very, very important because the individual mobility has increased. I see it in my own behavior. I take a lot of more times my car than I go by train or something like that. So it's a very important topic. And speaking of important topics, we had the honor to join the virtual conference of Trelleborg in the summer, and we ask our audience to ask their questions, but we weren't able to discuss every question and to answer every question. So we picked up some right now, and I hope we can answer them. So here's the first question of our audience. Is there a sustainable solution to produce enough batteries so that all cars could be replaced by electric cars?
Well, I think first and foremost, the question points to the fact that we have enough resources. And if we were to throw away all the batteries at the end of the useful life, the answer would be no. So recycling definitely needs to come into play. And a very important aspect is we will need a lot of energy to produce the minerals, to recycle those minerals. One key question is there enough sustainable forms of energy? And by the way, sustainable forms of water supplies.
Exactly. I think this is a very valid point. recycling is key for the next and the generations which come after the next generation of the batteries to have enough resources. This is as well key. And if we speak again of geological available resources, I would say, in case we do not want to electrify 100% of the cars with 1,000 kilometer of range, it's a clear yes, there are enough resources available. The second question is, are they available right now? So if we think of a most recent study which stated that we would at least need to electrify 1/4 of the yearly or annual production of cars, that's 18 million cars in 1 year, the answer would be no. So a temporary shortage of resources is, of course, a thing that is ahead of us or a thing that will come. Yeah,
that reminds me of the Corona situation when everyone ran out of toilet paper and we all thought, what is going on here? I mean, there's really enough toilet paper on Earth, but not in a supermarket for a period of time. So this was a good example, I think, for the problem with the resources. But therefore, we have another question of the audience. And someone asks, I see the first 10 years of bottlenecks, but sufficient raw materials. Which raw materials do you see as insufficient for battery vehicles?
Well, I would contradict myself if I would state one now. So it's not about the general abundancy. It's more about how do we source it. And if we speak about, I would say everybody knows what are the most critical resources required for a lithium-ion battery. That's lithium. On the other hand, it's cobalt. Both of these metals are sufficiently available, but we need to think from an ethic perspective and we need to think from a monetary perspective. Do we want to take all of these resources and do we want to take them at any cost? Because we as Farasis, as you may know, out of the media, have signed a sustainability partnership with Daimler. And by that, we agreed and we commit to only source materials out of our whole supply chain with a sustainable approach and with an ethic approach. So we would not source cobalt out of mines where children are working. And by that, I think, to reduce the cost lever, which is, of course, connected with this decision, we need to reduce cobalt, for instance. And there's one very, it was very surprising, therefore I want to state it. Yesterday evening I had a long talk with my doctor father, and we discussed on what might be a scarce resource, and there was something very, very surprising. That's naturally abundant graphite. No one would ever thought about, or I would never thought about it, that graphite is scarce, but it's so costly and it's so expensive and you need such high energy to produce graphite in a large scale that currently you just can take naturally abundant graphite. And if you want to produce like batteries for 240 million cars, which is 1/4 of the cars currently running in the world, it would not be enough graphite. And that's a surprise from my side.
Well, at the end of the day, I said it in the introduction, it is energy, sustainable energy. Energy with zero carbon footprint that we will need to mine the resources, recycle them, remelt them, use them. That is one of the key contributors. But that is not only a question of e-mobility. I think that's a larger societal question.
Absolutely.
And something which is very important from a business perspective. So it's not all about gaining those materials. It's not all about gaining energy. It's also about managing energy and managing resources. So how do you do it at Trelleborg, for example?
Absolute key question. And I mean, we are a supplier very early on in the value chain. You don't see our products in the daily life. We discussed that in another podcast. But for us, it is the contribution towards making systems leaner, more efficient, take friction out, take mass out, that the overall energy consumption is being reduced. That's where we hope to contribute together with our partners, making systems better all the time. I mean, we all know that we currently consume three times as many resources and energy as the Earth could reproduce. So we need to reduce that footprint. It does not happen overnight. It's not that we cut out a third of, or back to a third of consumption. It's a policy of small steps, but we need to start now.
And while you approach it from the energy consumption, we as a battery manufacturer can approach it from making more sustainable, more longer lasting systems. So speaking about batteries, which are on the one hand designed for recycling, DFR, mm-hmm. or which are on the one hand lasting, just lasting longer. So I think since decades we are working on lithium-ion batteries, there is still more to go in an evolutionary step to increase the cycle life of batteries. And in that case, you can not use them for the whole life of a car, so which would be, in the best case, the first life, but use it as well for second life solutions like power grids or leveling, fluctuating renewable energies. And I think this is one other key to come to a most sustainable electrification.
You mentioned a keyword right now, which is important for our audience as well, because someone asked, what does the future recycling concept for batteries look like?
In short, complete. So we need to omit to take any of the scarce materials out of the value chain, meaning we shall reuse every single grain of lithium which is inside the battery, every single grain of cobalt, or we need to omit cobalt.
Closing the loops, I guess, is the key
exactly.
word. That we would need to control the material flows that opposite to other waste streams like plastics or electronic scrap, things disappear somewhere in the Asia-Pacific region and God knows what happens with it and children burn it up to recollect the metals and stuff. That is a horror scenario.
Exactly.
So I think from a societal perspective, we need to get the material flows structured and organized.
Can we organize it on our own? Every company says, yeah, we're not doing this. You mentioned your deal with Daimler that you say we are sustainable and we have we take care of all these social aspects, or do we need some, let's say, a recycling rate, a regulation to push those topics forwards?
Another quota that doesn't work?
I have no clue what you're talking about.
No, I don't think that regulation or a detailed regulation will be the solution. What we would need is incentives. It has to be an economically feasible market. And of course, it needs to be structured and organized. So when there is a business, people will use these. Of course, you want to prevent that things go into undefined ways. So framing the process right, but then make it a business.
But that's a good question. I want to dive in deep into that topic, because I think a lot of people out there, a lot of entrepreneurs are sitting there observing the things that are going on, and they ask yourself, how can I be and become more sustainable? I don't know where to start. It's quite similar to the situation if you say, yes, I want to lose weight, but I have no clue where to start. So what is your advice? Where can the entrepreneurs, the people in businesses start in getting their businesses more sustainable?
Well, first and foremost, that's not a simple question, because sustainability has a lot of dimensions. If I do the one thing, it could have a very negative consequence that I have not thought of. So first and foremost, I guess it is being aware of what my footprint is and see where's my sphere of influence, and then determine where I would like to start. For Trelleborg, I can say we looked into where we have our biggest footprint. And it's not so much that it is our own production and our own carbon footprint. For us, it's helping our customers designing, producing, and delivering more efficient systems and solutions. So we help our customers with more efficient systems. Yes, of course, we do the nitty-gritty small things that we have around our plants, the usual housekeeping things. They are important as well because they show the commitment. But it is for all of us important to see where do we have the greatest impact.
Mm. So the chief light master of a business. That's what I am. I always say, switch off the light, please, when you leave the room. This is something I really
We have made that person redundant. We went to automated systems.
That's cool. Yeah, but I like to do it because that's the one day, one part of the day where I can be the grumpy boss at my business. So this is a good thing. Yeah, switch off the light. But I have to ask one question. I was not good in chemistry. So in my head, a battery isn't something which is in any case sustainable with all those things in there, like lithium and all these other things. It's not like a banana. I throw it away and it's okay for my environment. If I throw something away, it's always a bad thing for the environment. Or am I totally wrong?
Well, of course, there is only a very small fraction of compostable components in a battery. So we speak about structural elements, which are aluminum foremost, which are plastic material. Of course, you mentioned lithium. From my perspective, this is probably something you can have in a closed loop. Lithium is quite, so you can win a very huge fraction, 99.9% out of a battery when it comes to lithium. But of course, this is again, as we just heard, an energy consuming process, and it's a costly process, and therefore, well, we need to establish a market for recycling companies which, well, invest. And you were talking about entrepreneurship, which, get good ideas how to most completely recycle batteries.
So maybe we can discuss that afterwards. I think that's a good topic for us, our new business project, making recycling efficient and, of course, a new business model out of it. I've got another question, and I have the feeling that we have a lot of nerds within our community, because it's a very specific question, and the person also mentioned it before she or he asked the question. I quote, a very specific question. Do you see a trend towards increasingly large cells and battery systems without using battery modules?
Well, answering that from a battery manufacturer's point of view, I would say yes, indeed, clear. We should do that. So, and you already saw it at the Tesla battery show, although it was not the, let's say, topmost innovative show we saw from that company. It just makes sense to increase the size of the smallest building block of the battery, which is the cell, because it makes it, from a volumetric perspective, from a cost perspective, from a weight perspective, more efficient, because you the fraction of components which do not help you in storing energy just gets smaller. But you need to have a look on the function, and you need to have a look on the safety. So there might be a reason to still keep modules in the battery pack, for the reason that you still need this logic order inside the pack, because you need to be able to diagnose all the cell voltage during the full operation of the battery. So not just second by second, but all the time. And you need to find the sweet spot of battery cells which are big enough to be cost efficient and which are safe enough. Because if you just mount the cells next to each other, of course you need to take care that your battery stays safe. So you and we as pharmacists are thoroughly working on finding solutions to prevent thermal runaways, to prevent a battery inlights or heats up the battery which is next to it. And of course, there, getting to extremely big cells, speaking of 200 or more ampere hours, might be challenging.
Well, I think there is another aspect besides the pure technology. For me, it's maintenance. And when I drive such a car, what I want is that this battery pack can be maintained. What I don't want is that things are being thrown away and I need to be putting $20,000 on the table to replace a big system.
Exactly.
I mean, I do it for my headlights these days, and I'm getting angry all the time when I pay $250 for a new set of headlights where only the light bulb is broken.
Mm-hmm.
And then I see there's pros and cons, and there has to be a balance between those two aspects. So the like with many things in life, the answer is not black and white.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we have to address that to the battery producer. Lucky us, here's sitting one. So we have got another question, which is, in my opinion, also a very nerdy question, but it's very cool to see that the people are practically minded. And the question is there a foreseeable time frame for the next generation of battery cells, and what would their performance compared to the current cells be?
Honestly, I don't think that there is a generation yet. We are still in revolutionary and evolutionary developments at the same time. So I think a lot of things are happening. So there is probably not a major leap step improvement that we can say it's in 6.5 years and 2 days. We see ongoing improvements. And I think that will be for the next foreseeable future, that we will see small steps, some breakthroughs here, some breakthroughs there. I see it rather as a curve than a leap step change.
It's an evolution.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think we already see in the market that there is still some room for improvement for the actual state-of-the-art lithium-ion battery. So I think we can at least have 1/3 more in energy density in the next years. And this is actually what Ferris is working on as well. So we are pointing or targeting like 360 and more watt-hours per kg, which is almost 1/3 more than we currently have with 280 watt hours per kg. And speaking of a revolution, so going to the real next generation systems or going to solid state systems, which may be a key enabler for next generation systems, this is something I wouldn't dare to state if it is in a few years or a few tens of years. I would say up to the middle of the 21st century, we shall find a solution, or we need to be so fair and get another path.
Mm-hmm. And we should not forget energy density is one thing. Loading cycle times is yet another. Yeah. It's more complex.
Yes, exactly.
Than that. Mm.
I know that you're partnering with Porsche, for example, for the e-engine, for the drivetrain technology. Can you give us maybe some numbers, how you increase the efficiency or other targets you have, just to create a picture what is possible with even those small solutions like sealing solutions?
Yes, of course. We work with leading OEMs and their tier one suppliers. And really, it is about taking 1-2% of friction here, improving the efficiency by 1-3% there. And sometimes it's even more. We talk about orders of magnitude, 20-25% efficiency gains that can be optimized. But on another point, the world has changed. We are no longer in this 8-year product renewable cycle. We have concurrent engineering. Customers jump in and out of projects. The whole industry has become so agile that what we work on today may no longer be relevant the next day. Or we pick out old things and said, well, we need to go back to that. The other thing didn't work. I guess that is the bigger challenge, to see how can we get the overall efficiency, but then get robust systems that really work in sync, because we reinvent the wheel. It is not like if you're a designer of an internal combustion engine and you need to look for someone that does a standard water pump, you don't have to go to yellow pages. For e-mobility, we have to solve a couple of challenges that we were not aware of.
More like the manufacturer idea and more the boutique thing.
Absolutely.
I see. I almost forgotten my favorite part of the podcast, because we were discussing that much about e-mobility. But the favorite part of my podcast is solution or sci-fi. I'm going on to read out a line and I want to hear from you. Is that kind of a solution for a future? Is that true? Or is it more like an idea for a sci-fi movie? So here's your line. E-mobility will only be one part for future mobility, solution or sci-fi?
It's definitely solution.
Yeah, that's true. Everything else would be sci-fi.
You were talking about evolution before, and I have no idea how to estimate it, because I don't know, is it really useful, is it valuable, or is it just like a small step towards the big masterpiece e-mobility? What do you think? Is hybrid a smart transition to e-mobility, or is it more like, yeah, that's good for gamification and for, let's say, a soft transition towards e-mobility? Or is it really, really useful right now?
I think it is, at the first sight, it's a feasible solution. Right now, the market is still demanding cars which you can take and drive down to the Gardasee without refueling. This, the current BEVs, so battery electronic vehicles, can with some, let's say, exclusions, they are not able to do that. Well, it is possible to get small, let's say, shoebox-sized 48-volt systems for mild hybridization. And you can have plug-in hybrid electric vehicles, which have like 30% electrification. The rest of it is the combustion engine. And with these cars, you are able to travel what the market still is demanding, like 1,000 kilometers or 800 kilometers. And therefore, I would say it's the logical next step. And speaking about quotes, you mentioned that at the beginning, it's currently not only feasible, it's necessary to meet the CO2 targets. Otherwise, the OEs wouldn't be able with their fleets to meet the restrictions.
The numbers I read out at the beginning were 31 minutes. That was, just to mention it, that was the charging duration they accept. And the reach they want to have with an electric car is 469 kilometers. So it's not 800, it's 469. And I think most of the electric cars here in Germany, they get it. So we're at the end of our podcast. And at the end of our podcast, we always do the sealing test, because we have some material which is used for sealing. And I know that Konrad is angry with me when I say it like that, but I name it. It's rubber. There are two aspects of rubber I really like most. It's one time it's the resilience, and on the other hand, it's flexibility. Flexibility, I think we need no explanation for that. But resilience is the capability of a material to return in its initial state after a huge pressure, for example. So here's the sealing test for you. Where do we need to become more resilient to drive e-mobility forward, and where do we have to become more flexible?
Like with my beautiful elastomer materials.
Here we go.
As a society and as consumers, we have to get more flexible in terms of the mobility approach. I mean, you mentioned the freedom when we were 15 and had our little motorcycles. Individual mobility will have to change. What we are used to today may no longer be possible in the future. So I think we have to be flexible, but we also have to be resilient enough to say, well, that's what I really need. To go back to where we have the basics. So I think there's a lot with my beautiful elastomers.
Well, from a battery developer's perspective or a battery manufacturer's perspective, I would like to connect both games of yours. So you were talking about truth or sci-fi. Mm-hmm. And there we saw there will be a variety of possible solutions. And the same it is in the lithium-ion battery development. So there are many paths to go. And I think we shall be resilient to go. We shall be resilient enough that in the case we see one path does not lead anywhere, we need to get back to the beginning and restart. Or probably we should be flexible enough to go on multiple paths in parallel.
Well, thank you so much for your time, and thanks for the tutoring in chemistry and material science. I really learned a lot, and I hope that you are flexible enough to do another session with me. I'm looking forward to that. And I say thanks for a moment. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in. Hope you enjoyed this episode. If you don't want to miss anything, just subscribe to our podcast. And of course, we are happy to receive feedback from you. So we're looking forward to your ratings and comments. And of course, we still want to answer your questions. Therefore, feel free to write us at info.podcasts@trelleborg.com. Thanks a lot, and see you next time.